Samantha?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, this is Jorge.
Hi, this is Samantha from Valley Vision.
Okay. Hello?
Roseanne Galvan. Hi, this is Claudia.
Oh.
Hi, Claudia.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Jorge.
Hi, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
No problem.
Heidi, are you on? But she's probably on mute.
Margaret?
Hi, everybody. We're going to have quite a few people on the call, so you don't have to announce yourself.
Okay, great.
It's going to be...
It's a habit.
Yay. Mm. Hope everyone enjoyed that swing and little good kind of upbeat music to...
Yeah, we can do that next time.
People are logging in, and we're just a minute shy of 1 o'clock, so we'll just wait till a couple more people log in. So, thanks.
Alicia Parra.
Jennifer McCarthy.
Hey, Jen. It's Claudia.
Hi, Claudia.
Glad to see you're with us.
Yeah.
City of Burbank.
Okay. Heidi, do you want to get started? It is 1 o'clock. Sure.
Great.
To respect everybody's time, and we have a full hour for you planned. So, and are all our presenters here? Lisa and
yes,
I know.
Yes.
Pervin.
Yeah, I'm here.
Lisa's there.
Oh, I see.
Jorge.
I see.
Yep. Yeah. And Jorge, I know. And and Ronnie's also on the call. Great. Yes.
Okay.
I know we have lots of little sounds, little bell sounds of people joining us, and we're really thrilled with the outpouring of interest for this webinar. Let me introduce myself. I'm Claudia Veek, the CEO of Cameo, and we also have Heidi Pickman, our communications director, also working with me on the webinar as well. I also want to thank our co-presenters today, Jorge Reganin from El Pajaro CDC, Lisa Kervin from Renaissance Entrepreneurship Center, and Rani Kroger, I think I'm saying that right, from Optima. So we have a great group and array of business incubation models. And let's get started now. We say what's cooking, we've got a lot of different incubator models, one of which is a kitchen incubator, so we just wanted to kind of lead off with that.
Jerry Hernandez.
Let's,
how do we get to the next?
You just double-click. You're not just...
We look at
there. We're not leading.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, just double. Okay, great.
We're first doing Lisa.
Pedro Garcia, City of Concord.
Okay, we're getting started now, so we don't have time for introductions of all the people on the webinar. So this is Claudia Veek again, and we're going to start talking about really the whole reason why we feel incubation is a important method for cultivating local businesses. So we'd like to get started in terms of the do-it-yourself economy. Some of you have heard this term, and Cameo really coined it first. And what that means is giving a priority to harnessing the skills and talent in our local communities, and not just depending on business attraction strategies. We know that growing local businesses offers great opportunities to create wealth, and we are going to talk about some of the trends in a moment, the growth of self-employment and the growth of microbusiness in California. I know that you're on the call today because you are really committed to growing your local economy and want to learn new techniques to do that. And this is something Cameo is totally committed to as well. We believe that locally grown businesses are the lifeblood of our communities and that it is the foundation of a stable, sustainable, 21st century economy. So no matter what your goal is, if it's job creation, economic sustainability, downtown improvement, reducing income inequality, don't look any further than your own backyard, and let's develop the entrepreneurial talent there. The do-it-yourself economies is really an approach to sustainable job creation and in both urban and rural areas. And our goal with this approach is to scale up what works and to add new methodologies and to be inclusive with our partners, too. Now, incubating small businesses is an older method, and I actually was a pioneer, as Lisa knows, at the Renaissance Entrepreneurship Center, was really the first business incubator for inner-city entrepreneurs in California. And over time, that was in the early 90s when we had sort of the first incubation in California start to come forward. But we have some new approaches that have been evolving since then, and we're going to be talking about those today and also answering your questions, too, about, how best to cultivate the incubation, different incubation approaches. The next slide is really a visualization of all those little points of light of very small businesses. A lot of them are hidden in plain sight. You can see some of the lights in the back streets and the side streets as well as way down on the main street. So when we have you think of small business or micro businesses, we want you to think of some of those artisan businesses selling on Etsy, some of the small women-owned businesses that might be just, around the corner. For example, Melanie Findling in Mount Shasta has Quercus Consulting. She's got 12 employees working for her doing environmental consulting for that region. So what we're saying now and what we'll be talking about later around the incubation strategies is that we want you to be thinking about new, innovative, creative, and flexible methods based on creating jobs in place, and that's what we call the do-it-yourself economies. So if I leave you with any image, I want you to remember that micro-businesses are the roots of all businesses. Really, only 1% of all businesses turn out to be gazelles, and those are represented by the thicker tree trunks there. But the big trees need the sprouts for healthy long-term sustainability. Now, I want to give you some data in the next few slides. Some of you have seen these before, but I think it's important to review the data that provides the basis, the rationale for incubating new businesses. You know, we know businesses are starting smaller and staying smaller, and that 95% of all job gains in a year on average in our state come from the expansion of existing businesses or the birth of new establishments.
Angelica?
So in this slide, this was a big aha moment for us here at Cameo when we saw that even during the downturn, the micro businesses, the self-employed, had a net job creation of almost 1 million, whereas large businesses decreased net jobs by 200,000. So just to give you a sense in the next slide of, you know, what the overview of small and micro businesses are. We're seeing in the independent worker sector about almost 18 million people as of 2014, and micro businesses at the next level. So between those two, you know, the jobs that are created that people have created for themselves and also for, you know, in small amounts for others are, you know, 23, 24 million. So it's very substantial. By 2018, we expect there to be about 23, 24 million self-employed. And by that date, 50% of our workforce will have been self-employed or be self-employed in their career. And that is a substantial change in our whole workforce environment. Now, we know that technology is making independent work cheaper and easier, and we have more people in encore careers, women, particularly women, still seeking work-life flexibility, and companies also outsourcing and increasingly want workforce flexibility. So independent work is now perceived as viable, and in many ways, entrepreneurship is seen as cool, too. And
you're cool, man.
Let's see. Hold on a second. Okay. Again, a big aha moment for me.
Claudia, hold on one second.
Yeah,
let's just ask. Thanks.
Could folks put themselves on mute? That's better.
Before you tell us your big aha now. Nice and quiet.
Aha. Right. Yeah, in this slide on the economic impact of the very small businesses and self-employed, in 2013, was the last data I had for this, we had $96 million spent by self-employed people on contracts with other independents, which amounted to 2.1 million full-time equivalent employees. And that's really major money and major jobs, and that was, you know, really for us at Cameo, the big heads up that we needed to be focusing economic policy in this area. So what are the tools that we have at our disposal to support the growth of small businesses? We see these in five different, sort of the ecosystem, back to that, you know, the picture of the roots of all business. Just think about the ecosystem of entrepreneurship and small business. And there are really five C's to that. In terms of climate, that's really you as city officials and city employees to help to create a climate, whether it's through regulation or through economic development policy. The capital, the coaching, the connection to markets, and the culture are all addressed through the business incubation techniques that we're going to be talking about. And we know that when businesses get this support, 80% will make it through those first startup years and go on to create an additional 2 jobs on average. So, again, it makes sense to invest your time in cultivating your locally grown businesses. I mentioned that the culture of the business incubator, this is really an integral to the whole notion of incubating businesses, because you're creating an intentional community of entrepreneurs and a real center of energy in your community that breeds all kinds of other things. And we're going to hear more about that from our speakers in just a minute. In fact, I'd like to now have Lisa Kirvin, who's Managing Director of Renaissance Entrepreneurship Center, left a little E out there, I notice now. Lisa, would you like to speak now about your model, how it's evolved, and in the next 5 minutes? We can take some questions. We'd like to save your questions to the end, but if you have some questions that you'd like to just type up, you know, I'll make sure we can address them, you know, either during the speaker's time or right afterwards. Okay, Lisa, take it away.
Hi, everyone. Yes, Renaissance was, is everyone able to hear me? I'm hearing somebody's reverb. Everything okay?
Seems fine, yeah.
Okay. So, as Claudia said, she was pivotal in starting business incubation here at Renaissance when we were a single site. And then when I came on board here in 97, or in 2000, we had already secured the building that we had. And so we were able to really promote a site-based incubation model. We had a full floor, about 6,000 square feet of our office, of our headquarters office here in South of Market, San Francisco, dedicated to new businesses that were within about 3 months to 6 months of having written their business plan and were fairly new businesses upon intake into the incubator program. Fast forward, we now have 5 sites, and we have incubation at 4 of those sites. In the Bayview, Hunters Point area of San Francisco, we have a smaller incubator where it is a bit more focused on contractors and the construction field. And so there we have very small sites for contractors who, by definition, are not going to be in an office all the day because they're out at jobs, but they actually need a physical location. And so we have physical locations for them, but it's much smaller space, not usually closed-door offices, just enough to give them a footprint. We also have incubation in our Renaissance Marin site, which is in San Rafael. There we have an absolutely lovely space that was provided to us through the Marin Community Foundation. And that afforded us an opportunity to do several different types of incubation simultaneously. We have 6 cubicles and 3 offices, which are more the traditional space. We have a kitchen incubator, and I know that you'll hear more specifically on kitchen incubation from another one of our speakers. And then we have a drop-in center, which speaks a little bit to what you were talking about, Claudia, about allowing for the flexibility of the changing needs of micro-entrepreneurs. And then our 5th site, or our 4th incubation site, is in our mid-Penn office, which is located in East Palo Alto. And we have a very modest new incubator program there. In fact, we've got openings, so if you know anyone who's interested in spots, let us know. And there we're going to have 1 closed-door office, which ideally can be somebody who can be externally focused and almost a retail space, which we have not had in our other sites. And then we have 4 internal cubicles. And we're also deliberately allowing and bringing in nonprofits into the area because East Palo Alto really has a lot of need for services, and nonprofits have a lot of need for support in order to really make a go at it in Mid-Peninsula. So those are our 4 sites. We have a 5th site in Richmond, which is just getting up. We don't have any incubation space there. We've had a lot of conversations here about incubator versus incubation. So just to give you a little more clarity about how we've created our incubators, I'll just provide an overview. We have a lot of lessons learned about our incubators, the model that we have, that I'm happy to share if that's how you'd like me to go. We have been very deliberate about creating multi-industry incubators where there is, you know, there's a web designer, there's a bookkeeper, and there is a leadership training facility person right next to each other. So it works really well because they're not worried so much about the territory of their business, but they're all addressing marketing and operations and a lot of the similar foundation structure. And they can be more secure in sharing with each other and in cross-fertilization. We combine training and consulting and case management with making sure we've got just a really functional culture of looking up and out to ask for support so that the entrepreneurs don't feel as alone. I mean, you know, by definition, they've decided to start something alone, but they don't want to be lonely. And so kind of crossing that boundary for them has been something we've been very deliberate about. We wish to make sure that anyone, no matter if they have a cubicle or they have a drop-in center, they're able to bring a client into the building here or to any of our spaces and host a professional meeting. So there is free conference room space. They can reserve. Somebody walks in. They're greeted by reception. They're dealt with very professionally.
It's almost standard.
So that even if they may only have, you know, 40 square feet of space or even just a mailbox and they're part of the drop-in center, they have a very professional front for their clients. So we have found that multi-industry at multi-stage has worked really well to create the culture that allows for people to cross-fertilize and not to stay in their offices, because that's not what an incubator is meant to be. We provide mail, receive mail. We have telephones, photocopiers, receptions to get rid of some of those fixed costs if somebody is going out on their own. We do action plan development, one-on-one support at least monthly, all kinds of training and networking cross-fertilization options so that our incubator programs are not in and of themselves and separate from the rest of the support that we provide micro-entrepreneurs. We're constantly using all the other different programs that we have to support the tenants in the incubator.
Lisa, this is Claudia.
Yeah.
Could you mention lessons learned? Have you seen any changes in the 20 years that you've been doing business incubation, or a little bit more than that, actually, 25 years now?
Right.
In the type of client that's or business that's coming to you, do you want to just maybe wrap up with a few insights?
Yeah, let's see. Changes. I guess what I would say, what I have noticed personally is that there are some changes, but in many ways they are phases. 15 years ago, everybody wanted to get out of their homes and, you know, be away from whatever they said, their laundry, the TV or whatever, and be out in a professional space. And then about 7 years ago, everybody was saying, isn't it great how I can run my business from home and I can, you know, I don't need to have an office, et cetera, et cetera. And then about 5 years ago, everybody said, I want to get out and I want to be with people. So there are phases to what people are trying out in running a business. We see it with, you know, with the foosball tables and the couches in you know, in Twitter and places like that. So those phases, they show up in incubation as well, and they show up with micro entrepreneurs. So I think one of the lessons learned is to constantly be understanding that things are going to trend and things are going to be different, and they may be back to where they were 5 years ago. But this business is starting right now, and they don't. Their history is not 5 years ago. Their history is 4 months ago, and so it's new and real for them. But we in the micro-entrepreneur industry have a chance to really just kind of reuse lessons as we're growing, because many things are phases that has happened before and is returning. People right now, I feel very comfortable. Entrepreneur is much more of a blessed and is really kind of being usurped almost, Claudia, as you said, for lots of different, creative thinking. It doesn't mean the same thing as being a micro entrepreneur and getting out on their own. So I have a whole lot of lessons learned about how to work with tenants that I'd be glad to share. If there's time, on what we've noticed in terms of tenant-based businesses. But more and more people are doing just product-based businesses. There's a different kind of an incubation model there. Kitchen is one kind of product-based, but there are all kinds of other different product-based businesses, and they need services in a different way than a service industry would.
Well, that's great. Thanks. And we will reply to that when we get into a little more discussion towards the end. But this was a great beginning, and thanks for kicking it off. And now we're going to hear from Jorge Reguerin. He's the board president of El Pajaro CDC in Watsonville that serves three counties, I believe, in that area, Monterey, Santa Cruz, and San Benito. He's also vice president of lending for the Santa Cruz County Bank that I know does some micro lending in that area. And Jorge, you represent a very important incubator that's really serving very low income and largely rural area. And you're going to be talking about the Kitchen incubator, but also you come from a background of one of the first and only retail incubators, I think, in the U.S. So I just want to put it in context. You're a very experienced provider, and the Kitchen incubator that you've created is extremely exciting and state-of-the-art. So anyway, I'm going to turn it over to you, and you can tell us about how that's evolved and where you are now in the program.
All right. Thank you, Claudia. Well, El Pajaro CDC has been providing assistance to local entrepreneurs since 1979. And what I'm going to do today is briefly explain what we do in the next two slides, and then we're going to get further into detail about the Kitchen incubator. So if I could have the next slide, please. So what we offer is startup assistance, business coaching, specialized business consultation, low-cost trainings, commercial and agricultural loan packaging, marketing assistance, strategic planning and expansion, and business incubation. Next slide, please. The programs that we have at El Pajaro CDC are our business education and loan program. We have a family child care development program. We have the Plaza Vigil Retail Incubator, which Claudia mentioned earlier. And we have the Commercial Kitchen Incubator. And we also have a program of microlending in collaboration with the Santa Cruz Community Credit Union. Next slide. El Pajaro CDC Commercial Kitchen Incubator. This project, I can truly say, is a very intense grassroots effort with collaboration from different sectors of the community. We had tremendous help from the city, the landlord, the kitchen designers, the general contractor, some of the farmers, and also our board of directors. At El Pajaro CDC, we have very limited resources, so we had to rely on in-kind contributions from the various folks that I mentioned and also concessions from some of the providers. It really was a project that required a lot of creativity and thinking outside the box. Next slide, please.
Is that the somebody in the kitchen incubator? I'm just joking.
That is the incubator.
No, I meant the background. I meant the background noise. So just everybody make sure you mute yourself.
No,
yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. No, go. Sorry.
I'm not sure what that background is. But this next slide is the layout of the kitchen incubator. It's 8,000 square feet. It has three pods, has a hotline, it has a bakery section, and a food processing section. We have 15 stations and two freezers. So it's got an open design, it has loading docks, and it has various sinks throughout the facility to allow folks to handle food in a safety manner. Next slide, please. What I wanted to do is just kind of explain the context or the background of our community. The unemployment rate is twice the national average. We are a rural community, and we have a large number of small family farms. We have a high percentage of Latino population. So that's the setting or the context where we are at. Next slide, please. So the objectives of the kitchen incubator, the first and foremost objective is job creation in the Tri-County area. Again, as I mentioned, the unemployment rate is twice the national average. So this is a very critical need for our community. The second objective is to provide a facility to small family farms to create added value products. We have a lot of small organic growers that produce various types of crops, but if they were to add value to their crops, they would be able to get a better price and a higher margin for their products. So this is a mechanism that allows some of these small family farms to add value to the various crops that they have. The third objective was to transform informal food producers into formal food microenterprises. In our community, we have a lot of informal food producers that are selling various types of food products, and it is very difficult for them to become a formal business because of the requirements that exist in terms of health and various other requirements. So this the kitchen incubator provides a facility for them to take that step from informal food producers to a formal food producer enterprise. The last objective was to offer a facility that has all health permits and food safety requirements. There's a lot of concern about food producers that are not following health requirements, and it has become an issue. So the facility has all the requirements that the health departments require, and it allows the kitchen incubator participants to produce a product that's safe and meets all the requirements. Next slide.
Hi, and I'm going to interrupt and ask everybody,
yes,
if you're typing, we can hear you, so please mute your phone. That would be great. Thank you very much.
Okay, so what are the challenges in starting up a kitchen incubator? In our particular experience or case, the facility location was the first and foremost challenge. We had to locate a facility that would allow processing of food production, and In our search, we were able to find a location, a food processing facility that was vacant for 7 years. It was a much larger facility that we had envisioned, but it was available. It was a 20,000 square foot facility. So what we did is we divided it into two sections. The front part is a shipping and receiving for agricultural organic products, and the back portion is the commercial kitchen incubator. So what we did is, in order to secure the facility, we talked to the landlord, and of course his desire was to sell the property. And we didn't have the resources to buy the property, so we came up with a lease purchase option. We leased the facility for 4 years with an option to purchase. And again, when I made the comment about concessions and being flexible, the landlord believed in the project, believed in what we were trying to do, and was very flexible and made certain concessions to make this kitchen a reality. The second challenge that we have once we secured the facility was designing the commercial kitchen to meet the needs of the various food producers. And again, we were able to work with a kitchen designer that was able to put together a concept to accommodate the various needs. And it has worked out very well. You know, it's an open type of system. And we were very careful in terms of the design to make sure there wasn't any cross-contamination between the various food producers. The third challenge was the building permit process. Again, we worked very closely with the city because we had a food processing facility that had been vacant for 7 years. So obviously there was a lot of items that were out of code and not up to the current code. So that was a very important process that we had to go through. The city, again, was very helpful. And in fact, what they did is they gave us an in-kind contribution by allowing one of their junior architects to work in our project. In other words, they would pay for their time, and they would be working exclusively at the kitchen incubator. They also provided us with a building manager that, again, worked at the kitchen incubator but was paid by the city of Watsonville. So, again, you know, it took us about 6 months to go through the process. But, again, the city of Watsonville was very helpful in terms of providing assistance and making this thing happen. The other challenge that we had is, you know, the funding sources for the project, because we located a facility, we have a concept, we know how we're going to build it, you know, so the funding or paying for the for this project was very critical. So again, we relied on various sources to make this happen. The SBA, through SAMFAR, was able to secure a grant to purchase the equipment. This was done through a set-aside, and this was very important in terms of the process. The tenant improvements or leasehold improvements that were required for the kitchen were done by Robo Bank through an EQ2. Again, you know, I think they normally don't use an EQ2 for this purpose, but they were thinking outside the box and were able to make this happen in terms of financing the tenant improvements, which, by the way, was the toughest part of the project to secure financing. And then the purchase of the facility, we were able to do that with bank financing with a guarantee from the USDA Business and Industry Loan Program. So as you can see, it there were various players and various instruments that were used to finance the project. The other challenge was the program structure. So once we have the facility and we funded for the project, you know, you have to design a program for incubator participants that will meet all their needs. So that was a challenge because there's different needs for different participants. So we had to tailor a program to try to meet the needs of the various folks that wanted to be at the kitchen incubator. The next challenge was hiring a kitchen incubator manager or coordinator. This is, again, a very critical and important aspect of the kitchen incubator, and we were very fortunate in hiring a incubator manager that had gone through our program. In other words, they had gone through our business and loan program. They had written their business plan, so we were very fortunate in getting him to be our incubator manager. And the other challenge that we faced was the outreach and recruitment of participants. Because, you know, we thought, okay, once we build it, we get this project up and running, you know, people are going to come. And that just was not the case. It took a little while to get folks to come in. And I think an effective outreach and recruitment of participants is very important. And I think that that's something that, you know, other incubator projects that are looking to start up, they need to look at that piece and some efforts and energy into that.
Jorge, Claudia, I'm jumping in. Can you tell us how many tenants you have now? How many businesses are operating?
Yeah, we have we have 22 program participants at the kitchen. And each business, on average, employs about 4 people. So we've created 88 new jobs in our local economy. We have 6 participants that are going through the process. In other words, in order to come into the kitchen, you have to come in and you have to have a business plan. And, you know, if you don't have a business plan, then you go to our business plan training program. And then the second big piece is to make sure that you're knowledgeable or aware of the food safety requirements that that you need. And we also want to make sure that whatever product that you want to launch is market ready. So we do an assessment to see, you know, how you're going to get your product to market. Because it's one thing to produce the product, but the second big challenge for the food-related business is how do you get that to market? And that's something that we work very closely with the participants to ensure that, you know, that they're successful.
Yeah. We have a couple of questions that are directly related to this, and we have also a couple of questions for the larger. So I'm going to hold the ones that are more general. But somebody wants to know, Roseanne Galvan wants to know, are you charging a lease rate to the business owners? Is it discounted, or are they paying full price?
Well, what we do is there's an hourly fee for use of the kitchen, and it's a sliding scale depending on what they use. If they use, for example, the hot food line, there's a fee for that. If you're just doing food prep, there's a fee for that. Or if you're using, say, for example, the bakery section, there's another fee. So it's a sliding fee scale based on on what you use.
Great. Okay, and then the other question that I think was relevant to this particular, to your thing, is how are the payments being made for the building improvements and your building purchase? Who paid for it?
Well, the EQ2 is technically an investment in a nonprofit, but it is actually a loan. So it's a low interest loan that we make quarterly payments. And we have to, you know, do that through our cash flow from operations, from the revenue that we derive from the kitchen use income. And then the other, you know, the same thing for the mortgage payment. But what we do is, like I explained, we have 22,000 square feet is our facility. The kitchen portion is 8,000 square feet. But we lease out the front portion, which is about 12,000 square feet, to a third party, and they use that for their shipping and receiving of organic products, produce, actually. So that's something
Jorge,
that...
this is Claudia. Can
yes.
you tell us, I think this is related to that, is how much does your operations currently cover of your monthly costs? Do you still need subsidy, or is, you know, can you give us a percentage if you happen
yeah,
to know
yeah,
that?
Definitely. I mean, we're our kitchen fee use income is increasing because we obviously have more participants and they're using more hours, but it definitely does not cover everything. We subsidize, El Pájaro CDC subsidizes this program through the rental income of the front portion of the building, and also from some grants and foundation money that support some of the programs.
Thank you.
So I think that covered
Jorge, you
the other...
Yeah, we
yeah,
need to finish
that,
up.
That's what I was going to say is that, you know, in your questions covered the next two slides that I had. And the last slide is just the contact information for our executive director, Carmen Herrera Mancid, who has done a wonderful job, very committed to the project and to the CDC. So I want to make sure, you know, she gets a lot of credit for this. Also, I want to mention, you know, we have a small board, but it's a very hard-working board, and they put in a lot of time into getting this project off the ground.
Thank you, Jorge. This was really interesting, and I encourage people on the call today, if you haven't seen their facility, to take a field trip to Watsonville, a beautiful place, and see how it works and taste some of the amazing food coming out of there. I know every time I go down there, I always come back with a bag full of mole mix and other things,
yeah.
too. So thanks so much for this discussion, and we're going to have some questions later, but I want to make sure that Rani Kroger has plenty of time, and I'd like to introduce her now. Rani's a co-founder and lead instructor, mentor, extraordinaire of Optima Business Bootcamp. Rani, after you left your career in investment banking, I understand that you followed your heart into the social and economic justice arena, and that one of your first projects was to start a hybrid for-profit, nonprofit community college alternative. Can you, you know, tell us about your business model, what you've learned, and then where you are now?
Yeah, thank you, Claudia. I was part of a founding team that created a for-profit, nonprofit community college alternative. We blended the accreditation and educational programs of a small, tuition-dependent nonprofit college and raised about $30 million in venture capital through a for-profit to put in place the technology, marketing, enrollment, and student services to deliver that community college alternative. Through this experience, I saw really firsthand the challenges with higher education. On the for-profit side, the desire of investors to see the growth in enrollments, which often came at the expense of student outcomes. And on the nonprofit side, a sleepy governance model and lack of resources, human, technology, financial, that made it difficult to innovate around delivery of programs. So we thought there had to be a better approach to developing an educational institution. Using the cooperative model, where students would pay a tuition or program fees, which would become their member ownership in the institution. Faculty and staff would become employee owners, and investors would still be owners, but at a much limited extent. This essentially moves the value away from the capital put into the institution and puts it into the hands of the students and workers who are making the institution what it is. We took this model to venture capitalists to fund the conversion of some existing technical vocational schools, and they said, wow, this is really amazing, and we think it'll be disruptive to higher education, and you're the right people to carry this through. But then they said, we can't fund this. This cooperative model of cash distributions won't give the type of return in the time period that our funds require, plus it doesn't allow for enough control over the board. So what we decided to do is more grassroots level, start with what we can teach, and that was business. But not just another business skills training program. Rather, we wanted to create opportunities for diverse entrepreneurs to be in community, receive high-caliber education, resources, and mentorship to develop their businesses, and share in the wealth created by each other's successes. So we applied this multi-stakeholder cooperative model to launch Optima last year. We launched out of Impact Hub Oakland in February of 2014 and started our first cohort in September of 2014. We are the first ever member-owned business accelerator, as far as we know, and we offer three programs, a small business and enterprise program for small local businesses and social enterprises. This was the program that we had our first cohort in September 2015. A freelancer program, which we started in January of this year to help people who are looking to become self-employed. And a joint program with Meridian University's Integral MBA in Creative Enterprise to earn an MBA and start your business at the same time. The first program that we started with, the Small Business and Enterprise Program, is designed to meet businesses at their different stages of launching, business planning, funding, and scaling through four 12-week modules. In the first module of launching a business, we take entrepreneurs through processes for clarifying their business idea and market opportunity, testing their solution, and creating a business out of the solution. So we really bring in entrepreneurs in that first module that have been kicking around an idea and don't know where to take it, have been to a hackathon, started working on this idea, and don't know where to go next, or have been in business for maybe 10, 20 years and haven't made a sustainable go of it because they don't really know their market opportunity. And by the end of that, they have a go-to-market plan and are ready to take off. In our second module, creating a business roadmap, we work with those same entrepreneurs in identifying resources needed to grow the business and developing a financial forecast for their funding needs over the next few years. Our third module picks up with that funding needs, and it's called Funding a Business, coaches entrepreneurs through evaluating funding options that are aligned with their mission, vision, values, and the goals of their business, and helps them through navigating those funding processes. And our last module, Scaling and Thriving, supports business leaders in developing and implementing data-driven decision processes across their businesses to drive scale and impact. So we take that next big project that they need to scale their business and whatever that appropriate scale is and take them through the process of planning that so that they're ready to execute on it. Our second program, which I said we launched in January, is a freelancer program that is 6 weeks long and geared towards helping people step out and become self-employed as a services professional or creative worker. So we dive deep into what are their values as a freelancer and why they want to become a freelancer and help them develop that business model and lifestyle around becoming a freelancer. All of our programs use a combination of convenience of online learning, in-person workshops, personalized one-on-one mentorship and peer mentoring.
What he wanted?
And
the claims kept on table. He doesn't have enough staff. He was trying to go, but he's got some stuff he swamped. The clean tech, remember the clean tech round table?
Oh.
Shannon, had I get
sorry,
this?
Whoever is
sorry,
talking
Ryan.
About a clean tech round table.
No, you know enough. I didn't
excuse
have
me,
it
whoever
yet.
Is talking about a clean tech round table and speaking, we can hear you if you could mute your phone. Thank you.
Sorry, it was
Ryan.
On mute. I guess it went off. It did. It dropped off. I'm sorry. Let me hit mute again.
Okay. Okay, Randy, take it away. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So in addition to this really flexible program format, our programs really encourage entrepreneurs to think holistically about their businesses. What are their motivations for starting a business? What does business success mean to them? How does this business fit in with their personal goals? How is their relationship with money or lack of relationship with money impacting what they're doing in their business? What community impact, social, environmental, economic do they want to see with this business? And how every decision that they make about their business has an impact on their community. And as I mentioned earlier, our cooperative model makes us very different structurally from other business accelerators and entrepreneurship programs. We're owned by our members. Our small business and enterprise members pay a small monthly fee for the time they're enrolled in our programs and contribute a small equity stake in their businesses. And our freelancer members pay a small cash fee for enrollment in that program. It's through this shared ownership model that we've been able to create a real community that shares values, participates in our profits, and has a say in how our programs are run. And we're currently at serving 95 businesses across the Bay Area, but predominantly in the East Bay in Oakland and Berkeley across all of our programs.
And Rani, if I can jump in here, this is Claudia. Can you tell us how they stay involved? Because you've mentioned community, and you know it echoed what I said earlier about intentional communities, and incubation really is such a flexible word when we talk about how we can help businesses grow. And Optimus certainly is a really innovative approach to this. So tell us a little bit more about how they stay involved. We have about 10 minutes before we have to close, and we do want to have some more questions too. But yeah, give us a little sense of that.
Yeah.
How do you continue the community?
Thank you, Claudia. Community really is at the heart of what we're doing. So we are constantly looking for ways to keep our community engaged with each other. And what we found is, earlier this year we started a Facebook group just for the people that were in our programs. And it's been a really active group where people are posting their business needs, their business wins, encouraging each other, and starting to work across the different cohorts and across the different programs that we have. We also just launched a community management platform called Hilo. This gives people a better ability to search by the different skills that and gifts that the people in our community have, and make those connections in a different way. We also are doing community events that are offline, such as just networking events, gathering people, as well as additional business skills and training programs that are both public and non-public. Since we had our first cohort of the Small Business and Enterprise Program graduate from our full year just a couple weeks ago, we are launching an alumni program, which allows for them to get additional business skills and training just for alumni where they're at in their business right now, and be connected with each other and hold each other accountable through accountability circles, and also to get additional business advising from us. But what we found is a lot of crossover, a lot of people, small businesses and social enterprises that are engaging the freelancers in the development of their business and vice versa.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And I want to just say a couple of words about the makerspace as one other type of sort of a taking business incubation, sort of turning it on its head, which I think in some ways Optima has done as well. But just because I don't want to leave out, we don't have a presenter on makerspaces, but I know a lot of the people on the call are familiar with this. I would say it's somewhat of a trend that we're seeing in economic development. But again, it's client-driven. The clients are members. The businesses or beneficiaries are members of a makerspace. There may be a lot of different kinds of making going on, some of it physical, some of it, you know, software or online. But again, that is a different kind of business incubation, but it still is helping to create and grow through, again, an intentional community of entrepreneurs. So with that, I would like to open this up to some questions. Heidi, are you monitoring that?
We had
a few others. Yeah,
we have a couple other questions. One was, how do you measure success of those in your incubator, and what happens once they leave?
And we'd like to open that question up to Lisa, Jorge, and Rani as well. And I think particularly with Rani, it's interesting because of the way it's cooperative. Do you measure results? I mean, do you have a measurement? So maybe we could start with Rani and then go to Lisa.
Yeah, this is very important from a cooperative perspective that we have transparency into our membership base and how they're performing. So with this cohort that has just graduated, we are about to start implementing impact reporting that will take a look at the growth of their business in terms of, you know, revenues, profits, job creation, as well as the community impact metrics of their business going forward, and keep reporting on that every year.
Great. So when you say community impact, that has something to do with the mission that they had in one of the modules that you mentioned.
Exactly. The mission that they have and the social, environmental, economic impact that they have stated that they want to be providing their community.
Great. Thanks. How about you, Lisa?
Well, that's I like the community impact aspect of that too. That's really great to track. We have 12 core indicators that we track for all the businesses that we work with, including starting their business, sustaining, creating full-time employment for the owner, attaining financial self-sufficiency, gross revenues, and several other factors like that. We've been a part of MicroTest, Field Aspen Institute national survey that tracks impact, and we've been doing it for over a dozen years. So that has really been a good national survey for us to participate in and get a sense of our results vis-a-vis other colleagues in the field and other communities. But we've also been, through these surveys, tracking on more soft results in terms of how they believe business ownership has changed their life, you know, what their thoughts were with a year and a half of time since they were provided service, on how Renaissance's support has changed their business, and various other factors like that. For folks that are in the incubator, we try to meet with them monthly. We try to look at their books quarterly, and we try to have a conversation around the year in the past annually, so that we can track that change in a concrete way that way. We have not done a deliberate screen of post-incubator tenants. You know, we haven't said, let's go back and look at all the tenants that we had who have been out for 3 years. Let's reach every single one of them. We haven't been that deliberate. But the MicroTracker program does a random selection of 100 clients, or the survey, 100 clients in the year, not the immediate year, but the year prior, many of you may already know it, and invariably two or three to five of the clients that we reach were incubation tenants because we were so intimately involved with them for up to 3 years.
Thank you. Claudia, I'm just going to appoint a logistics and ask presenters and ask our presenters if they're able to stay on for an extra 10 minutes or so because it is 2 o'clock to answer. There's a few questions there still to be answered. Is that okay?
Is everybody able to give us another 10 minutes?
Okay.
I'm really sorry, but I'm probably going to have to drop off. This is Lisa. We're hosting 400 of our closest friends in a couple of hours. And
I appreciate your stepping in today.
That's okay. I don't know if there's anything I can do, but I'm definitely pass anyone on to me if they need to.
Sure.
Great.
Good.
Thank you. Okay. So go ahead. Now
thank
Jorge
you.
Can answer the thank you, Lisa, so much. Now Jorge can answer the metric question.
Okay, the main way that we evaluate our is by the number of jobs that are created by each participant, and that's something that we're starting to track because that's you know the main objective of the kitchen incubator. So that's the first and foremost way of measuring the success of the project.
Are you gathering information about gross sales?
Yes, we are. We're again, since we do provide technical assistance to the kitchen participants, we are gathering that information, and that's another outcome that we'll measure in terms of our project.
Okay, great. Thanks. There was a question asked quite a while ago that had to do with how do you find your clients? I know that some of you, that Jorge, I think you addressed that somewhat. Lisa, a little bit. Do any, Rani or Jorge, do you want to say anything about how people find you and join?
What we
sure,
do, Jorge, and the way we do is we have open houses at the kitchen and we explain our program and we have an outreach program through the small farming community and also with folks that are at farmers markets. And we also work with some small organic food stores that work with small producers, and we reach out to them to see if the kitchen would be a facility that they could potentially use. So that's how we do our outreach.
Great, Rani. How do people find you, Upsma?
Most of our participants are referrals from past participants, and we also receive a significant number of referrals from some of our partner organizations, like Impact Hub Oakland, being listed under their Business Academy as a joint program there, and through our local business improvement district and other organizations throughout the city.
Oh, great!
That's interesting. Going to the business improvement districts. I know Oakland. You're based in Oakland, and I know Oakland has like 6 or 7 of them, and have very direct contact with them, business owners. So that's a very good, probably good source. And there's one. I think we have one more question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry.
There was a question from I think it was Dean Peckham. Shall we read that one?
Yeah.
This was to Rani. Makerspace, like makerspaces, cities are seeing the rise of co-working spaces.
Are you trying to link with area co-working spaces to provide some more formal business education structure to these entrepreneurs or skill building?
Absolutely. We are based out of Impact Hub Oakland. We have an office there. We run all of our small business and enterprise program out of Impact Hub Oakland in the classroom there. And we have rotated our freelancer program from Impact Hub Oakland, Impact Hub Berkeley, and the Port Workspaces. So we find that co-working, you know, providing our programs in connection with the co-working spaces has been a great opportunity for the people coming through our programs, as well as a great way to draw people into these spaces.
Wow, interesting. Dean, if you're still on, did you have anything? Did we cover your question?
Yes, you did a fine job of addressing it. It's nice to see the linkage here after seeing so many co-working spaces that I think a lot of the entrepreneurs need the formal education here. So it's nice to find a model out there that seems to be working.
Great.
Thanks.
Thank you. How do you ensure diversity? I know that's part of your goal, Randy, from what we, you know, when I introduced you. How do you ensure that there's a diverse base of clients coming in? Because co-working spaces that we see in San Francisco, certainly where Cameo's based, tend to largely be white, middle class, and, you know, tech-oriented.
Yeah, that is a really great question. Impact Hub Oakland tends to be a lot more diverse than most of the co-working spaces. So just by being resident there, where the co-founders are all women, women of color, in fact, that draws in a lot of the diversity. Not only that, but we keep a real diversity in our mentors. And just as the face of this business, our first class was about 90% women and about 60% or 70% African-American. And we are currently running at 70% women across all of our cohorts and more than 50% people of color. So this diversity is something that just builds on itself. When people see people who look like them, they are attracted to the program.
That's right. That's so good to hear that in practice. So are there any other questions? Because we just really need to kind of wind up right about now. But okay. Heidi, were there any others?
Nope. I think we've got all the ones that were asked. And I'm sure if you do have questions and you think of it later, yes, we will send out the slides, and we can forward any questions that you have onto any of the participants to see if there's anything, you know, if you're interested in starting a business incubator, or if you have a business incubator and you're looking to talk with some other people just to see what they're doing, we're more than happy to facilitate those connections.
Yes, it was great to see so many CalEd members attending this webinar, and I want to encourage you to reach out to Heidi or myself, and certainly I'm going to volunteer our presenters today, too, to get more information and maybe just bounce some ideas about how you could incorporate business incubation, and I'm using that as that process, into your local development, business development strategies. The do-it-yourself economy, here it is, three great examples. So, everybody, thank you for your time today. Thank you, Randy, Jorge, Lisa's, not on, but she's great. And we look forward to getting together in the future and hearing how you're doing. Okay, so we're going to close up right
bye-bye
now.
Bye-bye, everybody. Yep, we're going to close up.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, everyone.